Welcome to this week's edition of the Third Opinion Podcast. This week we've got part one of an interview with the ADL on rising anti-Semitism, and we remember Mort Saul. Don't forget to subscribe to Third Opinion wherever you get your podcasts. Here's this week's Third Opinion.
Good afternoon. Good morning or good evening, whenever you're listening to this. This is the Third Opinion Podcast, and on WKDW Radio, Two Jews, Three Opinions. I'm Mike Deason.
I'm Maureen Jaffe.
And we are delighted you were with us this day. A lot of things going on in the world. I think one that you and I disagree upon, but is a big issue, is Iran and the trying to reinstitute the policy, the JCPOA policy with Iran. I saw Secretary of State Blinken talking about it. There's a real concern that without that, Iran is close to nuclear-grade weapons that they can do. And he says if they can renegotiate the treaty, they go back to the state they were when the treaty was in effect. Personally, I think that's a good idea. Iran scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Blinken also mentioned something this week about there's no indication that Iran wants to go back.
Because they're close to nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and by the way, and sort of what sort of got glossed over in the news media, and we mentioned on the show about 2 weeks ago, because the one thing that the administration said they weren't going to do was withdraw sanctions, but they did withdraw substantial sanctions about 2 weeks ago concerning Iran. And that should not go without notice or without saying. Now, I don't agree with withdrawing the sanctions, but at the same time, that's happening. I think that there are some major issues. I mean, look, I think the one thing I feel confident about is that Israel is not going to allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. Despite what's happening, you know, in international negotiations or conversations, Israel's not going to allow that to happen. I think the most important thing, and this goes back to the JCPOA, it's not, should we have a deal or should we not have a deal? The problem with the original deal, I mean, despite the fact that it had sunset provisions and didn't concern, like, all of their terrorist activities and, right. and humanitarian issues, it didn't involve the most relevant individuals in the conversation, which are those who are Iran's neighbors, whether it was, you know, Saudi Arabia, you know, Bahrain, UAE, Israel, Turkey, et cetera, all these people around Iran and Iraq who have reason to be concerned. I mean, Iran is a horrific aggressor in the Middle East, is responsible for the death of tens of thousands of Muslims, in addition to sponsoring, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah and everything else. So I think that the problem is, you know, having at least have these players, Israel and the others, at the table in conversation. I think the one positive thing is that Israel is part of that conversation. They are part of that dialogue now, which I think is very important. And, you know, I think that to me is the most relevant piece of it all. And I feel confident that, you know, at this point, Israel's not going to let Iran have a nuclear weapon.
Well,
I mean, I think,
are they going to attack, you think?
It's not about, let's be clear. Iran and Israel have been at war for decades. There it is sort of like the silent war. Iran has been trying to take Israel out for decades. And so there is the silent war that's been happening between them for a very long time. And Israel, as you know, there, I mean, though Israel doesn't take responsibility, you know, when certain factories and weapon things, you know, all of a sudden are sabotaged or different things are happening in Iran, you know, it's assumed Israel's probably behind it and Israel's on the ground. And we know, you know, unfortunately, it was reported that there was a ring of Mossad spies that were arrested in Iran, which, you know, they're going to be horrifically tortured and executed.
Well, they're talking about executing six folks in Iran. Well, no, not in Iran. Wasn't this Hamas?
That was Hamas.
That was Hamas, not in Iran, where they're talking
about. Yeah, but separate. But yeah, but still. But then I think there's also some in Syria and Turkey that they said there were some spy rings that had gotten captured and you know, unfortunate. But yeah, we can shift to Hamas. I mean, obviously this week, Hamas, another six individuals were sentenced to death by Hamas for engaging in sort of what they consider some type of normalization with Israel. Again, that's considered, you know, a crime.
It's treasonous. Yeah, it's a Hamas.
It's treasonous.
But they're supposed to get the approval of Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, before they condemn anyone to death. And they've totally ignored that. That's exactly right. But they're a terrorist organization. The world has labeled Hamas as a terrorist organization, and they carry on their terror without their borders wherever they can.
And to be clear, like these are six Palestinians living in Gaza that Hamas is now, that their military court has sentenced to death, and you know, accusing them of being informants or spying for Israel. And I think, you know, whether that's true or not, I mean, I think it's important to recognize that there are many Palestinians within Gaza who try to speak out against Hamas, and there are silence. I mean, you and I have talked about reporters and different human rights activists who have been arrested and silenced by Hamas. And of course, you know, the easiest thing for them to do is to accuse them of, being an informant or in any way collaborating with Israel. Then you're immediately a traitor and sentenced to death. So this is concerning. I mean, it's how do you have peace with people that don't even allow for any type of dialogue?
No. So speaking of dialogue, the Miss Universe, who is an Iraqi, spoke out this week because there's been calls to boycott the Miss Universe pageant, which is going to be in, wait for it, Israel.
Tel Aviv. I know. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So there, she's in Iraqi, and she is Miss Universe, and she says this is ridiculous to try to boycott this. Sarah Idan is Miss Universe. She's beautiful. She's well-spoken. And we have a clip from her. Let's listen to Sarah.
This is a message to Mandla Mandela, who demanded from the Miss South Africa organization to boycott Israel and not send their representative to compete in Miss Universe pageant, which will be held in Eilat in December. All I can say is, how dare you? How dare you as a man try to tell an organization for women and women empowerment what to do? This is an opportunity that millions of women dream of having to go on world stage and represent their people, their nation, their culture, not governments, not politics, and definitely not your political agenda. The term you use to attack Israel and call it an apartheid is a term only been used by radical Islamist terrorist organizations such as Hamas, Taliban, and the Iranian regime, all of them who hate women and women's rights. Please allow Miss South Africa to go and experience Israel up close on the ground and let her be the judge for herself. And I'm positive, just like me, she will be shocked to see that the Israeli government consists of Muslims, Jews, Arabs, Christians, and those people not only they get to vote on policies to shape their future, but they're also part of the Knesset, and they have political parties, and some of them are even Israeli ambassadors to the world. Last but not least, I would like to congratulate the new Miss South Africa, and I hope that you will enjoy your trip and learn not only about Israel, but about all these beautiful other countries. This is what the Miss Universe pageant is about, and I hope to see you there soon. This is Sarai, Miss Iraq.
You know,
in her own words, I mean, I applaud her, Mike. I mean, I am so proud of her for standing up as a Muslim, Middle Eastern, Iraqi woman. Just standing up against this call for the boycott and the lie of apartheid. And standing up for women's rights. I applaud her.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, if we can't find common ground on something like a beauty pageant where it brings the world together, we're never going to get anywhere. We have got to look for commonalities instead of differences.
And the scary thing is, you know, every time she does this, she, you know, literally takes her life into her own hands when she openly stands up for, you know, whether it was Miss Israel or standing against these boycotts. I mean, she literally is taking her life into her own hands when she does this. It's so dangerous. But, you know, it's so important. So this has to be your favorite story of the week, Mike, which is the most Jewish World Series.
Absolutely.
Tell us about it.
Well, there are more Jews playing in this World Series than ever before. It's one, you know, sometimes we think of Jewish people as not being as athletic as non-Jewish people. Well, that is being put to rest in this World Series, as there are Jewish players on both teams. It is very exciting. So you can't say one team or the other because there are Jewish players on both teams. I tend to root for the Braves because of the Astros cheating scandal.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to feel any warmth toward the Astros. And we are taping this on Sunday morning. The Braves could actually win tonight. By the time you hear this, the Braves could be world champions, and I'm hoping so, but not sure. But, you know, another thing that really struck me this week, Laureen, was the controversy about the ethnic names in sports. And I grew up when the Braves were in Milwaukee. I was in Chicago, and they were big rivals of the Cubs.
Milwaukee Braves.
The Milwaukee Braves. They were the Boston Braves before that. And I thought, what if, and I heard some Native Americans talking about their offense at this, if there was a team named, let's say, the Iowa Jew Boys, how would we feel? You know?
And
I went,
of course.
I probably would be offended. Would you?
Of course.
So
absolutely. I mean, and there are exceptions, like, you know, for instance, the Florida State Seminoles. I mean, the Seminole tribe actually fully endorses
that
and supports it 100%. And so and I think it's having conversations with the relevant, you know, Native populations, and, you know, making sure that what you're doing is not offensive. That is it being done in a way to honor and respect, or is it sort of based in some type of, you know, inappropriate, you know, past, you know, racist ideology? I think that's the conversation that needs to be had, because, like I said, in the example of Florida State University, the Seminoles take great pride in that, the Seminole tribe of Florida, and appreciate it, because it's, you know, it also, they, I mean, it's, by the way, great publicity for them, and they love it. I mean, it helps educate people, inform people, you know, and then we have, you know, it brings people to the Seminole territories in Florida, to the Seminole reservations. And I think that's and super helpful in that sense. But I understand
how Native Americans with the Braves and like the Cleveland Indians, which changed their name to the Cleveland Guardians and didn't check to see that there was another Cleveland Guardians. They're being sued over that because they didn't check. Did you hear that? There's a soccer club.
Yeah, I mean, you would think somebody would have done, like, a search somewhere.
However, years ago, when I worked in Norfolk, I worked for an NBC affiliate. NBC unveiled a brand new logo that they spent millions of dollars researching, and then were sued by the Nebraska Public TV Network that had the exact same logo. So
it's like, how do you not? It's like,
how do you not
do
that?
Know that?
Yeah,
right. It's
I
so
mean,
ridiculous.
You're an attorney. If you have a client that's going to do it, wouldn't you put the research out?
Yeah, you have responsibility. so let me ask you. So I will tell you what I found to be both the oddest, and sort of the most just aggravating story of the week. I mean, so in Chile, which has a very strong anti-Semitic population. Is it Chile or is it Paraguay? One of them has the largest Palestinian population outside of the Middle East. And they did a 75-year commemoration for the suicide death of Hitler's right-hand man, Hermann Göring,
who came up with the Gestapo.
Right. And it was almost like, and it was like a commemoration of him and his life, like celebrating him and like let's just re, it was like, let's remember him. And, you know,
yeah, what a great guy.
I know. And the Jewish community is like, what? And they're like, oh, we're sorry, you've misinterpreted our article.
Yeah, how can you misinterpret an article that extols the wonders of Hermann Göring? I mean, really?
I know. They're like, oh, it was historical. It wasn't meant to, you know, to honor him. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me. You're like, in essence, extolling this guy, talking about all the wonderful things he did, you know, like, oh, you know, Hitler's successor, right? I mean, okay, so that is very alarming. The Jewish community in Chile is very small. It's only 18,000. I mean, it's very alarming, you know, when we think about, because we don't really talk about that much, the anti-Semitism in Latin America. It's there. And it's just as it's there in Spain. I mean, how about this? This is a young girl from Spain. Her name is Isabel Peralta. She's 18 years old. She has received and taken a college scholarship by a far-right neo-Nazi group in Germany called Der Three Weg, the Third Way, and she to learn, in essence, how to engage in sort of like neo-Nazi propaganda. And she is known, well-known, you know, in Spain for supporting, for instance, Palestinian Land Day, you know, which is condemning, you know, Jews in Israel. She was quoted as saying, absolute obligation to fight for Spain, to fight for Europe, which are now weak and have been sold off by the enemy. Only the disguise will differ. The enemy will always be the same. The Jew, the Jews are to blame, and the Blue Division fought for this. End quote. So I don't know what the Blue Division is, but this is Spain. This is a young girl. She's 18. And you know, first of all, sort of the oddity of her standing with Hamas. You know, she also, you know, openly supports Hamas, which is odd, and also part of the neo-Nazi movement. So you see this weird connection now of these two extremes, you know, from the far right and the far left sort of coming together. I'm just like in a state of shock that, you know, again, this is happening in modern day Europe, and it's just there.
The anti-Semitism that is rising throughout the world, throughout the United States, we see a lot. In fact, we will have an interview coming up with the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League in our next half hour, talking about the rise of anti-Semitism and what we can do to combat it. But it is pervasive. It is frighteningly pervasive in our country and in the world. It just is so so upsetting.
It's out of control.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, the celebrity. So, you know, this has been going on for many years, many in the film industry globally, and probably some of your most favorite actors and actresses that you're not even aware of openly support the boycott of Israel. And so Tel Aviv, there's a huge LGBTQ+ film festival that will be happening in Tel Aviv. It's the Tel Aviv Fest. And there's been a huge call within the film industry, which is, you know, which happens pretty much every year, calling for a boycott of participation in the Tel Aviv Fest. And you know, it was so upsetting about this because the LGBTQ community is so vibrant in Israel, especially in Tel Aviv. And the film festival itself, you know, supports Palestinian filmmakers who obviously share the LGBTQ message, and those who are interested in coexisting peacefully with Israelis, you know, to bring a much more, you know, tolerant, inclusive Middle East. And that the film festival has always been known for that. And you have Palestinians who are part of like the judging panel for the film festival. And I mean, it's a whole, you know, and it's so crazy. So you get all these, you know, woke people out there deciding we're going to boycott. And I was very proud of a handful of
big actors,
famous celebs, big actresses
who support the festival, including Maya Mbalik, who's obviously Jewish, Neil Patrick Harris, who is gay. Who else? Diane Warren, one of the best songwriters ever around. If you've never heard her music, look her up. She is just spectacular. Helen Mirren.
Mila Kunis, yeah. Who is a Syrian Jew. Billy Porter, Sherry Lansing, Gene Simmons, Greg Berlanti, Tracy Ann Oberman. I mean, just so many. So I'm grateful they signed. They all penned and signed an open letter against the boycott, calling for the support of the Tel Aviv LGBTQ film festival. So, you know, thank you to each of them for what they're doing and taking a stand, because it's really, you know,
yeah,
when you see just like, it's just so extreme, it's so absurd. I get very aggravated, you know, when
you
people
get
just
aggravated
openly.
I've never known you.
Never.
Sometimes
never.
With me, folks, you got to understand that. Speaking of the entertainment world, we lost a giant this week, Jewish comedian Mort Saul, who I had the pleasure of seeing once, who came out with just a bunch of newspapers and just went through the newspapers. I'm sure some of it was prearranged, but some of it he's just going through and commenting on that. This guy was brilliant. He had just an amazing way with him. I wanted to play a clip to show how things have not changed in many ways. This is from the Ed Sullivan Show in 1960, before the Nixon-Kennedy election. And Mort Saul is commenting about that. He was just a terrific comedian, a terrific commentator. And let's take a listen to Mort Saul, who we lost this week.
Thank you for that passion. I'll keep mentioning the real candidates, and I'll see if you equal it. That's the problem this year. Now, as you know, we have a Californian running for office, although not a San Franciscan. And I started my meetings here in a cellar, just like who? A German leader started in the cellar. And ended in one, I understand. Although they keep bringing magazines back all the time that say Hitler is alive. You see a lot of those. And some people look upon it with delight, so that we won't have to rely on new leadership because he knows the area. You know that group? Anyway, San Francisco, as you know, I don't know what we're best known for across the country. I guess quality television starting tonight. This is the answer to the great debates between Nixon and Kennedy and Sarnoff and John Crosby. I thought of that earlier, too. Anyway, if you're sightseeing, you know, if any of the CBS crew is sightseeing, you might want to take a look at our bridges. During the war, they were protected by the National Guard, so that which now moderates at jazz festivals where students riot. That's it, right? That's it. The National Guard, you've seen pictures of them hitting students, and it's a sort of a vicarious thrill. It's the closest thing to hitting an intellectual. It isn't the same, but anyway, so... At any rate, they usually come down with shotguns and warn the kids. It's, you know, drop those beer bottles and come out of that phone booth, right? All of you, right? Anyway, so the city is, during the war, the National Guard was guarding the Bay Bridge because they had a feeling that an inventive saboteur might set some cats loose in perfect rhythm. There was a lot of challenges like that. The intelligence people were looking for the Russians. The intelligence people are usually one war ahead. You know about that? That's it. So we have one bridge you've got to see called the Richmond-San Rafael Bridge, which took 4 years to build. And if it's finished now, we don't know, but it has a large dip in it to allow navigational access for ships without, you know, opening it all the time, which you couldn't do. We keep people from getting the work and all. So it has this dip, and most people interpreted that at the time as, you know, the engineers losing interest as they made their way. Anyway. So, as you know, we have an election coming up, and very quickly, and it's there are two candidates so far. It's all over but the doubting, as I once said. But there are two candidates, and you have your choice. I always like to brief people and tell them about their franchise. A lot of people don't realize that, and they throw things away. At the Democratic Convention, it was an attempt at suicide. by a delegate who did not name an alternate and was saved as a result. But there's a kind of, you know about this? That's right. The conventions were amazingly similar. The two candidates are going to be, you know, they're doing television. They've done a couple. They're going to do a couple of more debates. And you'll get a chance to see their television manner, which is indicative. If you're good on television, that's as much as you can say about anybody this year. And the two of them, a lot of people think they're the same. And you've got to get over that. That's what I wanted to point out. They're much different. A lot of people say, I don't have to watch any debates. I know those two guys. And I'm going to stand up there and say, so are you. So are you. Well, so are you. Then there were some cynics who said that it would probably be Senator Kennedy saying, so are you, and maybe the vice president saying, so's your old man. I heard that. Now, both of them, thank you for them, right? Both of them were in the United States Navy, and Vice President Nixon was a lieutenant commander. Senator Kennedy was a lieutenant. He's a hero, as you know. His PT boat was destroyed, and he saved his crew under fire. He injured his back, and when he was released from the hospital, he was decorated by President Truman. And President Truman did not know him until that time. That was 15 years ago. And as I understand it, there was a ceremony on the White House lawn, and it was expedient during the war to have maybe 300 GIs get a decoration at once. And President Truman would try to impress them with the value of it. And he had a ritual, you remember. He used to say, I'd rather have this medal than be president. And they all agreed, except this lieutenant, who said, you know that? So now, of course, see, they operate in different areas. For instance, Senator Kennedy is in favor of foreign aid, and some of the Republicans feel that it's spending. That's been their attitude. And Senator Kennedy always says, well, it'll stop communism, the foreign aid. And then he has adequate documentation. For instance, he pointed out that earlier this year, the Red Chinese tried to invade Formosa and found to their frustration that they could not get past the American supplies on the beach.
The guy was brilliant, you know? And what he did is that I liked, he spanked everybody on both sides. The liberal, no, I mean, that, you know, right. he, when he saw the hypocrisy for liberals, when he saw it from conservatives, he was a true commentator that really, really did it. Like I say, I saw him in person once and was just amazed.
I don't think he was ever on Jerry Seinfeld's show on Netflix, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wish he was. So for those, which by the way, for those of you who have never watched a show on Netflix, I'll give a little plug for Jerry Seinfeld. So it's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and they're like 12 to 15 minute little clips. They're like little shows where, you know, Jerry calls up a buddy of his, like another comedian. Most of them are Jewish. Like, hey, when you want to go get coffee, he always has like a fancy car. He always tries to pick a classic car that he associates with his guest. And then it's them just like getting coffee and telling jokes and having a great time together. So, you know,
It really is. Hey, listen, we got to go to break. Before we go to break, I want to, for those in the Tampa Bay area, and I know we have listeners all across the country, there's a big event coming up this week at Congregation Charizetic along with St. Leo University, the Catholic Jewish Studies Group. We talked to their director, Matt Tabby, I don't know, a month or two ago, and there's a big event at Charizetic this Thursday night from 7 to 9 o'clock, and it features a dialogue between Jews and Catholics, and Matt Tabby was just great because he wrote a letter after the Florida Holocaust Museum was defaced with anti-Semitic symbols and words, and he came to the defense of the Jewish community and said, we've got to all get together. So if you're in the Tampa Bay area, check with Congregation Charizetic after you hear this, and it's a free program, and you can do that. But let's take a break, and then we'll talk about anti-Semitism with the regional director of the ADL. You are listening to The Third Opinion.
Third Opinion will be right back. You know, we like to remind you a lot to subscribe to Third Opinion. Here's why. Subscribing to Third Opinion wherever you get your podcasts means when a new pod is posted, it goes directly to your podcast provider and it's ready to listen to. No muss, no fuss. For us, we get a consistent understanding of how people are getting the podcast and how many are listening. That helps us deliver more of what you're listening for. So, at the risk of being a little repetitive, subscribe to Third Opinion wherever you get your podcasts. Let's get back to Third Opinion.
Welcome back to the Third Opinion, Two Jews, Three Opinions. I'm Mike Thiessen.
I'm Lori Jaffe, which, by the way, we should also mention, Mike, that, you know, if you like our show, go on to Facebook and like us. So we're at the Third Opinion Podcast on Facebook. You can leave us a message. You can like us, share with your friends. Or you can always also check out our website, thirdopinionpodcast.com. So it's either the Third Opinion Podcast on Facebook or thirdopinionpodcast.com online. And you can always reach out to us that way, leave a message, like us, share the good word with your friends. We are really thrilled to have you joining us.
Right, whether it's on the podcast or on WKDW, any way that you can hear us, if you like the show, tell your friends. If you don't like the show, please be quiet.
Right.
So anyway, we were talking about the rise of anti-Semitism in the world. The ADL, Anti-Defamation League, released a survey that showed that one-third of American Jews say that they have experienced some sort of anti-Semitism. I found that shocking, absolutely shocking. And the incidences in Florida are going to shock you even more, as Lonnie Wilk, who is the regional director of the ADL, he's out of South Florida, but he's for the entire state. We had a long conversation about the rise of anti-Semitism and what we as Jews and non-Jews who are offended by it can do about this. This is part one of Lonnie Wilk.
Well, what we are seeing is definitely concerning across the country and right here in Florida. We've seen over the last 6 or 7 years, we've seen a steady spike, a steady increase in anti-Semitic incidents. ADL tracks anti-Semitic incidents that are reported to us, that we're made aware of through the media, that we are made aware of or connect with law enforcement about. So it's, even though our audit of these anti-Semitic incidents is not per se an exact accounting style audit, in the sense that we don't have all of the incoming data regarding every incident that occurs anywhere, it does give us a unique lens in looking at trends and issues, looking at where incidents are happening, where what motifs, the type of offender, if we know those. And what we have seen over the years is really just the steady increase in anti-Semitic incidents in our country. We've seen a rise in incidents coming from the left, coming from the right, incidents, anti-Semitic incidents that incorporate Holocaust and Nazi type imagery or rhetoric. Nationally, interestingly though, nationally in 2020, we had a 4% decrease in anti-Semitic incidents in the incidents that ADL tracks. We had a 4% decrease, which was still at overall at record levels. However, in the state of Florida, we tracked a 40% increase in anti-Semitic incidents, 40. So that is definite cause for concern. And we, again, we're seeing incidents from vandalism of institutions. We're seeing individuals being harassed. We are seeing students reporting anti-Semitic incidents. So it's definitely of increasing concern throughout the country and right here at home.
Well, we've certainly had our incidences here in the Tampa Bay area. The Florida Holocaust Museum had graffiti on it. There was a parking lot in a condo. I mean, it's everywhere you turn. Why do you think in Florida there's a 40% increase? What's the trigger?
Well, we had a variety of issues. Again, one of the interesting or problematic, not interesting, components that we've definitely seen is issues coming from multiple sectors seemingly simultaneously. So we had anti-Semitic Zoom bombing incidents, which who the heck heard of the term Zoom bombing before the pandemic set in? But it was interesting that we had this when the pandemic began. There were many that said, you know what, we will probably see fewer incidents overall of anti-Semitic and otherwise, because there was the expectation that there was going to be much less human interaction. People were staying at home. People were on lockdown. So without that human interaction, and then shortly thereafter, we started getting reports of this thing called Zoom bombing. And one of the first reported incidents that we had here in Florida was horrible. It was a family that was burying a loved one, and while they were graveside, someone and the funeral was being put up on Zoom, and while they were graveside, someone hacked in and shared Nazi and anti-Semitic horrible messaging that appeared on the screen. So while this family was literally burying their loved one, they were faced with vile anti-Semitism. So even when you can think that the methodology for spreading hate or anti-Semitism is lessened, those who want to spread hate will find a way to make it happen. We did monitor and track incidents throughout the state from, as you mentioned, incidents in right there in Tampa. We had other institutions throughout the state vandalized. And then going into this year, in addition to the types of incidents we saw last year, going into May of this year, during the conflict between Israel and Hamas, we had anti-Israel incidents which bled into anti-Semitism. And those are also significant concerns throughout our area, on college campuses throughout the country. So we are seeing a lot of a great deal of anti-Semitism spring up from many different areas, all seemingly simultaneously.
You know, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there is a difference between the anti-Semitism on the right and the left. On the right, it seems to me, they just hate Jews completely. They hate Muslims as well. I mean, they're put in that same category and all, and they want to be like almost an Aryan nation. Where on the left, it seems to be more pro-Palestinian and lies about apartheid and then the BDS movement. They seem separate to me. They're both anti-Semitic. They're both hurtful. They're both hateful. But I think there is a separation. Am I wrong on that?
There are definitely differences in gradation. Some of the anti-Semitism that we see, and we're using the terms right and left, you know, kind of as a catch-all for things that are obviously very nuanced. But we're seeing, over the years, we've seen a significant drive up in extremism related that incorporate anti-Semitism. And over the course of the last few years, I mean, we just had the anniversary 2 days ago of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, where white supremacists gathered, the largest white supremacist gathering in decades, and the chant was pretty clear. Jews will not replace us.
Clear as day, right? Yes, there were some.
And they were saying,
"Well, they didn't say that, and they did."
And what was interesting there was they weren't saying Jews will not replace us. In other words, they would not be replaced with Jewish people. That wasn't what they were saying. They were working off of a conspiracy theory that Jews were going to be bringing in immigrants who would therefore replace, in their minds, white people. And so that dynamic was what they were, and that conspiracy is what they were referring to. So we've got, the extremism from those groups and from that those types of ideologies, white supremacist ideology, which has by and large led and has been seen in a great deal of extremist-related violence. So there's a massive amount of concern there. There is much more of a, ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt just wrote a piece in the Washington Post talking about the subtlety of anti-Semitism coming from progressive circles, but that the anti-Semitism, whether it's coming from the right, the left, or anywhere in between, really needs to be taken extremely seriously and challenged at every turn. And we were speaking earlier, one of the things that I think is incumbent on people to do, we get asked frequently, these are very large issues and not every person can take action when there is anti-Semitism at this 30,000 foot level, or if there's extremism, or if it's something on the news. But what everyone can do, we all belong, or we all affiliate with political groups, with interest groups, with ethnic groups. When we see anti-Semitism or any kind of bigotry, but especially from a group with which we identify, we must call it out. We must question it. It's not enough if you are a conservative to call out anti-Semitism when it comes from progressive circles. It is not enough if you're a progressive to call out anti-Semitism from conservative circles. It must be called out you have the strongest voice when you're a progressive and you call out progressive anti-Semitism. When you're a conservative and you call out conservative-related anti-Semitism. And when there is bigotry, we're speaking about anti-Semitism, but when there is non-anti-Semitic bigotry, Islamophobia, homophobia, xenophobia, any kind of bigotry, we as the Jewish community must speak up and must speak up loud. We, as much as we look into and need allies, especially now, we also need to be allies, especially now.
I couldn't agree more. You spawn a couple of questions. First off, with the Charlottesville trial just getting underway and the insurrection trials ongoing, and certainly a lot of the Proud Boys as one of the groups wore anti-Semitic shirts and jerseys and all that, is there a concern that this will ignite some of their followers to become even more anti-Semitic or maybe more overt than they had been before?
I'm not 100% certain if the chief concern, the primary concern, is particular to any individual extremist or extremist group, though we are monitoring them strongly. I think the larger issue is the cultural and societal impact that those groups and seem to be having more and more, and leaders, cultural leaders that we have, political leaders, elected officials, education leaders. When we have a society that does not stop bigotry or hate in its lower track, in its lower forms, in heck, even in things like simple jokes or inappropriate language, when we as individuals, if we hear, if you hear a friend make a joke, make a slur, and you don't challenge it, things like that have a way of becoming societally ingrained. And so when you have the acceptance of belittling language, of anti-Semitic language, of homophobic language, and so on, deeper systemic acceptance of that bigotry takes hold and escalates until you have anti-Semitic or bias-motivated violence. And so when we look at extremists, very few people in this world are born extremists. We have a unique opportunity to move the needle societally when we call out anti-Semitism, when we call out bigotry, when we have any leader from the president of the United States to the president of the PTA, from the local dog catcher to a sports celebrity, when we see or hear anti-Semitism, we don't necessarily need to confront every bit of anti-Semitic rhetoric in the same fashion. We can have a conversation. It doesn't mean calling out anti-Semitism doesn't mean denouncing the person who made that comment. In other words, there's a very important and nuanced difference when you hear something, an anti-Semitic remark, an anti-Semitic comment. There's a difference between saying to someone, what you said came across to me as anti-Semitic, and here's why. Let me give you a little bit of an understanding of why that came across to me as anti-Semitic. There's a difference between that and you're anti-Semitic.
Really a well-spoken guy. I thought, fascinating. Just fascinating.
Absolutely.
But we've got to speak out as much as we can. And I thought what he said about the fact if someone says something that's anti-Semitic, and you and I know about this well, Laureen, because we were with another radio station where we experienced tons of anti-Semitism. But he said, instead of saying to someone, you're an anti-Semite, I like his approach of saying, I find that an anti-Semitic statement. And it puts them less on the offensive, defensive. And some people, I think, say anti-Semitic things and don't realize that it's anti-Semitic.
Right. I think you and I have talked about that. I think we've had conversations where even sometimes athletes or different people, just because they've heard stuff and they have no idea that what they're saying is anti-Semitic. We've seen that. And those people know I'm very apologetic and quick to recant of it and informing it. But at the same time, we also know anti-Semitism is definitely growing at mass rates on the far left and far right. And a little scary, you know. Even this week, for those of you who remember, we had Ken Marcus on from the Louis D. Brandeis Center several weeks ago. Louis D. Brandeis Center is still, dealing with University of Massachusetts, UMass in Boston, because there was a student there who was off campus. There was a Students for Justice in Palestine protest going on at the state capitol, and there was a student there, a Jewish student there, who just sort of came under attack by this mob, and very concerned about it. The Brandeis Center has reached out to UMass saying, this violates student conduct. What are you doing? I mean, if this can happen to this Jewish student, off campus, how much worse is it going to be for him when he's on campus? The university has remained silent. This has taken them several months. They still aren't responding. But we've seen this happening time and time and time again over college campuses in this country. So that's a little disturbing.
It is. Well, and in school boards, like a story that upset me this week is that Ted Cruz defended parents giving the Nazi salute at school board meetings. Now,
I understood what he said, because he's saying, I mean, even the Attorney General of the U.S. said it's protected under the Constitution.
It is protected speech But I don't think anybody should condone that. I mean, it is there. Listen, no. I grew up in Skokie, where the Nazis marched long after I'd left. I was out of college by the time, and I had these huge disagreements with my late dad about it because I thought they should be able to march. I'm a big First Amendment guy, and my dad, Skokie has a lot of, or did when I was growing up, of Holocaust survivors. A lot of my friends' parents had the tattoos on their arms, but still at all, in with the First Amendment, I thought they should have been able to march in Skokie. My dad did not. We also argued over
Vietnam, but that was a totally different. Like Cruz's point here was, the parents who were using this loot weren't doing it because they support neo-Nazism. They were doing it because they were, in essence, accusing the school boards of acting like authoritarian regimes. But and what happened was these parents who were having issues were being marked by the Attorney General's office for domestic terrorism. And the parents were going, wait a second, you are the ones who are being authoritarian. And that was sort of the use of the symbol towards the school boards. It's different from Skokie.
But what they said, and Merrick, you know, Merrick Garland grew up in Skokie. That is protected speech. And what he said, I watched the whole testimony, being the nerd that I am, that he said that is not what they're going after. They're going after violence. And there have been threats to school board members threats of attacks and going after their kids and killing their families and all that. And that's where the Justice Department says we are there. But no, he agrees.
And that's fine. Yeah, no, I think Ty Cruz agrees. Nobody disagrees if like people are being threatened or their lives are being threatened, of course. But the point of that use of the symbolism, it wasn't that these weren't parents who were neo-Nazis. It was sort of accusing school boards of being authoritarian.
It's the same thing to me as the people who are wearing the yellow stars as the anti-vaxxers. Right. It leaves a really sour taste in
my mouth. It's a misuse. Exactly. So again, it's sort of like this minimizes, and the problem with this is it de-minimizes the Holocaust. Like,
right.
It's like, find another symbol. Find another, you know, I don't care. Call them Stalinists, whatever. But just like, use a Holocaust symbol or a Nazi symbol for something that is like so far from the truth. Like, there's no comparison. You can't compare those things. But you know, can I say on a positive note this week? So it's, you know, there's a little story. So this week, our parshat, our Torah story, had to do with. Sarah and the city Hebron, which happens to be, you know, the city of the patriarchs, where the patriarchs are buried. So a lot of people don't know this, and I'm just putting this out there because the Cave of Patriarchs are there, Marat Ham, they're in Hebron or Hevron. It is a historical city for Judaism, and you know, it's believed that both Adam and Eve were buried there. Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, Jacob and Leah. And what's really interesting is that, you know, in addition to being the first capital of Israel for King David before he moved to Jerusalem, you know, in the 1800s, you know, there was a chief Sephardic rabbi there in Hebron. There was always a Jewish community in Hebron. And it flourished. It was a very large Sephardic community. People forget that in 1929 there was the massacre where the Palestinians rose up and slaughtered the Jews that were living in Hebron. So I just want to, you know, so there's a lot of history there with Hebron. I just wanted to point that out, you know, because I know there's always, you know, everybody always goes up in arms if anybody builds like a house in Hebron. Like,
but
oh my God.
We're going to have to talk about that next week, Laureen. We are out of time. That's what that music means. Thank you for being with us. This is The Third Opinion. I am Mike Deason.
I'm Laureen Jaffe.
Bye.
That's our podcast this week. Remember to subscribe to Third Opinion wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, thanks for listening.